One of the things I really appreciate about living in the vicarage that I'm very grateful to the parish for providing is a dishwasher and a front loader washing machine. That sounds odd, I know. Front loader washing machine, they're really thorough, long, slow cycle. And one of the reassuring rituals of my day is to sit there in the study, tapping away on my laptop and listening to my energy slaves, as I call them, quietly chugging away, getting all this work done on my behalf. And, you know, those energy slaves of mine are very reliable because the manufacturers have tested and tested them to the point of destruction. They know how long they'll go on for before serious trouble starts. And I'm happy to report that day hasn't yet arrived for me. And when we think of that concept of testing to destruction, it helps us to understand what's going on for Jesus in that testing experience in the wilderness for 40 days before he commences his ministry. Because, you know, it's always a good idea before spiritual leaders are let loose on the people of God and people in general that they do undergo some kind of spiritual testing and purification process like this, which is why in our church we always have an ordination retreat before people are ordained. But hopefully, ordinands have been through a great deal more spiritual preparation than that. You see, the thing is that the more successful and the more useful spiritual leaders are, the greater the level of temptations are. And you might notice that the kind of temptations offered to Jesus constellate around the issues of spiritual power and spiritual pride. Because this is what really destroys the church when spiritual leaders go wrong. I'm reminded of this every time I drive over the Auckland Harbour Bridge. There's a very impressive structure on one end of the bridge that was created by a Pentecostal pastor who had created a congregation out of nowhere, really, consisting of 700 to 1,000 people. And they were so confident of the future, they took out a big mortgage and created this very large structure that all Jaffas would see as they drove over the bridge. The trouble was, the pastor, it turned out, was sharing his love quite widely amongst the women folk of his congregation in addition to his wife. And this caused consternation when the fact came to light. The church rapidly diminished in numbers. He fled overseas with one of his paramours, and the diminished minority left there were left struggling with a huge mortgage, a battle they ultimately lost, and the structure was on-sold to somebody else. Of course, temptations for spiritual leaders, or for us, are usually of a more trite, banal, and smaller quality, reflecting our level of gifts and our particular type of personalities. Nevertheless, they say that of clergy in general, a lot of them suffer from discouragement and depression. Great test of this in the Church Times, it says, do you wake up in the morning feeling a sense of apprehension and do you go to bed at night feeling a sense of regret? And one of the first steps that's always recommended for clergy in this position or spiritual leaders is to increase their spiritual practice, to increase the depth of it, what they're doing and the quality of what they're doing. And I guess this business about lifting our game in terms of our spiritual practice is the challenge before all of us here in Lent. And that's why I want to give three practical tips, three what I call useful tools of the kingdom, any one of which would be a big help to you. All if you did all three of them, I think great transformation would lie ahead of you. So it's going to be about practical tips of tools for the kingdom. And the first question I've got for you is, have you ever been on a retreat? That's why I put that little poem on the front cover of the Pebble this morning. It's all about what being on retreat is all about. And really, going on retreat is about going to a place that's peaceful, where you're not going to be interrupted for several days, and waiting in silence on God to see what God's got to say to you. There's often kind of supporting structures around it, you know, shared prayer with other people, a retreat conductor you can go and talk to about what's happening in your day. But that's the basic structure of it all. And there's two kinds of retreat. There's the organised ones, they used to be much more common, and the ones where you go along and you sort of arrange it for yourself in a retreat place. Organised ones where you sort of turn up with other people and there's a retreat conductor who organises regular daily services, is available to talk to each day, and it's all laid on like meals. The other ones, there are fewer retreat houses around now. They just found it hard to make a go of it as a financial proposition. So we're more commonly left in the situation of having to organise our own retreats. And I'm going to make three suggestions about how you might do this. Bishop Kelvin and some of his helpers in this line organise several of these kinds of retreats in the Otago and Southland region every year. He's about to lead one in Ranfurly very soon. Rather expensive, $450, unless the numbers go up. But then think about how much would it cost me to stay in a motel for three or four nights? Or what are my costs of living if I really analyse them down to the last detail? So when he retires next year, he's going to be making a major fixture of this, so there'll be more and more of these retreats laid on at local level. Another place that's really good to go to is the Compassion Sisters in Wellington, in their Island Bay base at Rhine Street, have now organised a retreat house where you can go either on group retreats together or on an individual basis. And that's both a beautiful location, they're a great order, and I hear very good reports of this place. And the great attraction of this, of course, is easy to get there in one flight from Dunedin. Isn't it a drag about life in Dunedin? We're just so far from anywhere, and getting to these kind of places can be difficult. And the third place that you might like to think about, a little unusual, is the Southern Star Abbey at Kopua, just outside Takapau in Southern Hawke's Bay, which is in fact a Cistercian monastery with a retreat house. Now, I know that's a bit unusual. When the Cistercians turned up in New Zealand just after the war, they were given a farm to base themselves on. They put up some temporary Nissen hut structures, and they were hoping to recruit lots of Kiwis into their order, something that's never really happened. But to their astonishment, Anglicans received their presence in Southern Hawke's Bay with acclamation. And Anglicans have been going there in large numbers on retreat ever since, which is why they've built this rather splendid retreat house. Archbishop David Moxon, for instance, went there for part of his honeymoon, which wouldn't have perhaps been my priority on honeymoon, but it says a lot about him and his spiritual depth. And because of that, the Cistercians have stayed in New Zealand. And the last abbot, one of the most significant figures, I think, in contemporary New Zealand Christianity, has organised lay people to become a part of the reception process for retreatants and to help run the whole operation. They live on site. The drag is, it's quite hard to get to Southern Hawke's Bay from here. You either have to take a car across on the ferry or take a bus having flown in. It's surrounded by dairy. The smell of, you know, cow dung doesn't put you off, but that's good, all your attraction. The real attraction point there is the divine office, which is sung by the monks several times a day and the night. It's hard to put into words the striking, numinous power of this place that comes from the divine office. And really, it's up to you to make the best use of time waiting on God in silence. The one other drag about all this is they have talking at meals, which I can't stand in retreats, which it seems to me undermines the whole thing. And to some extent, it's become such a popular place that people are going there as part of what we call a religious holiday rather than a serious retreat. If you go on retreat, you've gone there to do serious business, to try and get close to God. So what I do is I just withdraw from the meals and take my meal to my room. So those three options. The second thing I want to talk about as a potential tool of the kingdom that could be useful is what is drawn from the realm of Ignatian spirituality. It's called the examen. And this is a little process we carry out over about a quarter of an hour at the end of the day. And it's a five-step process. You know, my memory being what it is, I'll have to refer to my notes at this point. So we get quietly aside and we ask God for light. I want to look at my day with God's eyes, not merely my own. Second step, we give thanks. The day I have just lived is a gift from God. Be grateful for it. Count your blessings. Step three, review the day. I carefully look back on the day just completed, being guided by the Holy Spirit. Step four, face your shortcomings. I face up to what is wrong in my life and in me, and I ask God for grace to do something about it. Step five, I look forward toward the day that is to come, And I ask God where I need God in the day to come. You know, Ignatius said, God runs to bring gifts for us when we ask them in this kind of way. I know that's a lot to remember, so I just happened to put the five steps on a little piece of paper there at the back of the church. You can take away if you want to investigate this more. Finally, the third call of the kingdom, and it's about how to help our daily prayer. And this is the suggestion of having a mantra, a phrase, a few words, just a sentence drawn from a favourite poem, a favourite hymn. Hymns are in fact poems, or one of the Book of Common Prayer collects, they're great for that, or just a line from the Sunday Scriptures. For instance, on page 2 of the Pebble is the response to the responsorial psalm at the 10:30 Eucharist, "Be with me, Lord, when I am in trouble." I would in fact shorten that just to "Be with me, Lord," and I just turn it over in my mind slowly, kind of masticating on it as if I was eating a slow meal and enjoying it, just using it to still my mind, to still that relentless chatter what our brain's like, always anticipating the day, always anxious about things, trying to calm me down, to get me focused on God. Be with me, Lord. Be with me, Lord. And to use that as a way of kind of a gateway, an entry point into God. Well, I hope those three tools of the kingdom, there's something there for you in terms of deepening your spiritual practice over Lent. Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.